Well, you've landed here, the home of poetry in Wales. This is the Planet Poetry Podcast. In the office today, as always, Matthew Jarvis. Thank you for coming, Matthew.
My pleasure.
And we've got another guest as well. Ros Hudis, you've come all the way from Bronant. Thank you very much for coming in, and we are very much looking forward to hearing what you've got to say, because you're a little bit different from the other guests we've had here in the office on the Planet Poetry Podcast, in the fact that you're very much in the early stages of your poetry career.
Right, thank you very much. And yes, as you say, I'm at the starting out stage. In fact, I've been really seriously committed to poetry since 2009, when I began an MA in creative writing at Lampeter. And everything kind of blossomed from there. I went fairly rapidly from being a student, having work published in journals, and was then very lucky to be taken up by Rack Press. I've won a few awards and was fortunate to receive a bursary from Lit Wales last year, which has enabled me to produce a full collection, which is going to be published by Cinnamon later on this year.
Well, you see, there goes one of my questions for later. That's that sorted very clearly. And that's something interesting about progression, isn't it, for a newer poet. How do you feel that the pamphlet, this Rack Press pamphlet, and I have to say, straight at the outset, I've long been a fan of Rack Press. I think Nicholas Murray has a very nice thing going on here in his pamphlets. They're classy, nice paper, nice covers, restrained elegance, very nice indeed. So it's a real place to land on your feet with. You've got this pamphlet out from Rack called Terra Ignota. What part do you feel that the pamphlet has played in your development as a writer?
Well, I think it's greatly contributed to my confidence. And the great thing about pamphlets is, because it's not a full collection, I think people don't expect too much of you. They're looking towards your future and to where you might develop. So in a sense, it gives you a breathing space, a way to say, this is where I am now. I could maybe take this further in the future. These themes and these techniques will develop and unfold. But it does raise the sort of amount of tension that you're receiving. And as a result of being part of Rack Press, I've been invited to read at places like Ledbury Poetry Festival, which has been great for getting my work out there, for meeting professional poets and becoming part of that whole nourishing poetry community. So really, it's been great.
If you said that Rack sort of led you to a certain point, what led you to Rack? How did Nicholas unearth you?
Well, I was very lucky to be recommended by Samantha Wynne Rithick to Nick. So I sent him work, and fortunately he liked it, and it went from there. And
it's not what you know, it's who you know.
It's who you know. There's certainly a great deal of that.
I think the role of poets mentoring other poets,
absolutely,
is actually quite an important one, and plays quite a serious part in poetic culture. Can I take you actually into the content of the pamphlet?
By all means.
So in the first poem, I notice you've got Chernobyl and you've got leukemia. In the second, you've got Alzheimer's and the memory of a World War II bombing raid in which a woman, in the final stanza, comes out of a building carrying, and to quote the poem, a baby with no head swaddled in its shawl. And that seems to me, those two poems seem to set up the fact that this pamphlet gives a poetry that's rooted in intensely serious ideas and issues. And I wondered how that assessment by me fitted in with your own sense of what drives your poetry.
Yes, I think it's true. I think I'm very... What interests me, really, in a way, is legacy. And, I mean, this is the big issue for all of us living at this point in the 21st century, how we deal with the legacy, be it family legacy or the legacy of war and, you know, the immediate history. And the fact that I use the metaphor of the map a lot in the poem is very much to do with how that legacy is inscribed and presented to us, how it limits us, and how we can move on from it. And I hope there are also some lighter moments in the poems that maybe slightly deflect some of that seriousness and point towards a more optimistic or potential outcome.
Well, I noticed it's the final poem, isn't it, where you engage with Friends, the sitcom.
Yes.
Would you read that one for us?
By all means. It's called Topography, and I introduce it with a line from Elizabeth Bishop's poem, The Map. More delicate than the historian's are the mapmaker's colours. She can't read, but likes to crackle her fingers over the surface of a map she has opened, batted, and flattened into position beside me. She wants to draw along the contours of a story that flows out from her key place, New York, home of Friends, the sitcom. She thumbs it dead centre of everything, even though her chosen terrain hovers between bog wastes and Llandovery. I read somewhere that ancient cartographers planted Jerusalem at the kernel of every chart, the steady state in a swelling floret of landmass, tiny, angle-conflicted, and garrisoned with roofs, like an ageing mother who always got taken along and always had something to say about the menu. My role is pathfinder, not giver of the habitual view. When I trace a meek thread and call it ditch, she storms at me. No, that's where Ross kissed Rachel. She means, lead me there, into the heart of this pale green valley of paper in safety. Go where I go, without history getting between the lines. Bishop was right. It's how you colour it. And on this webbing of roots across earth, that skin deep wherever you go, my daughter paints in the chiaroscuro episodes of a self she will be.
So I was just wondering about, because Rack Press is published, if anybody who hasn't heard about the Rack Press publishing sort of schedule, by the way, it's a series of pamphlets which are published once a year in January, and there's four, maybe five pamphlets which get published at the same time. Do you have a feeling of camaraderie with the rest of the poets that you're emerging together?
Oh, very definitely. Although I should say that some of the poets, of course, have already had several books behind them.
Oh, yes,
and this is this mix that Nick tries to establish. But yes, I mean, you meet your other three compatriots, as it were, at the launch, and we've kept up with each other over the year via social media or met up at readings. There is this very much this family sense, which I think is nice. You probably don't get that with a bigger publishing house, but it's certainly there in a small independent press. And there's an element of support. And
yeah, how much sort of work do you float between each other?
Well. There hasn't been a lot of that going on, but there's, you know, if somebody achieves something or has a publication, you know, we'll just put a like on Facebook or a nice comment and certainly take an interest in what the other poets are doing. And
is that what we're talking about here with Rack Press, Matthew, do you think? Is there anything similar out there?
That's an interesting question. I think what's good about Rack is they have this range of poets, and I do like the fact that they're committed to this pamphlet publication. Publication of pamphlets seems to me a really good gateway for up-and-coming poets, and it also seems a great way of poets having the capacity, having the opportunity to have a small focus. Rather than pushing something to 60, 70, 80 pages, I don't see why poets should have to do that all the time. Pamphlets are a very lively, very useful part of our culture.
Great. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing what you have to say a little bit later about this year's... Well, actually, no, it's last year's
2013,
bunch.
2013, yeah.
Because we've got the next bunch of Rack Press. We've only been in existence for some months. We weren't even doing this podcast, were we?
January? Year, no.
This. So, in our defence, we'll get this Rack Press bunch up. We'll get then 2014 is done as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
In our defence.
It will definitely be a very good bunch of pamphlets, I'm sure. And it's probably worth adding that for established poets, the pamphlet is a wonderful way possibly to trial a bigger book or to maybe to experiment with a particular topic or get some focus on an idea that they're playing with, maybe a new form or a new way of expressing themselves.
That's a very interesting, very helpful piece of analysis. Mm. I think it seems to provide, the pamphlet as a form seems to provide options which collections don't necessarily, full collections don't. Let me take you back to inside your own work. I noticed an interest in the pamphlet with issues of people dealing with matters to do with health in one way or another. So, for example, one of the poems has someone suffering from anxiety. That's the third poem. Quite serious anxiety, seemingly an OCD issue. And I wondered why that sort of angle was important to you. Issues of mental health, for one thing, I'm always very interested to see engaged with in poetry. So I was interested in your engagement with health issues.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's partly an interest in engaging with the material that isn't necessarily always foregrounded in poetry or in literature in general. Or if it is, people maybe tend to think that it's there because you're soliciting for sympathy or you're trying to be very polemical about an issue. And I think I'm trying to sort of, although most of these issues that I bring up in the pamphlet are one way or another, they're grounded in personal experience, experiences I've had with my parents and with my second daughter, who was born with Down syndrome. But I suppose, in a sense, I'm trying to get beyond the immediate condition into what is the bigger symbolism behind this? How can the experience of this people be made into something we can think about that has dignity in its own rituals and is part of the way we all unfold as human beings, that maybe also feeds into the bigger issues of the legacy that we have to deal with and the way we find our humanity to go on from a maybe a somewhat dark legacy and recreate language, recreate the symbols that we can live by. So I know that all sounds very weighty.
It does sound weighty, but that doesn't worry me, actually. I think we've had a lot of poetry that's quite wry, quite droll, small matters dealt with wittily, and it seems that you are throwing yourself at big topics, at weighty topics. Does that provide a challenge, keeping them under control?
It does provide a challenge. I think maybe what keeps me grounded is I'm very interested in form and how form interacts with the content and how you can take a metaphor and perhaps use form to open up unexpected areas that are perhaps more sort of poetic in focus than they're to do with social issues. Well, for instance, in Terra Ignota, which is actually about my father, and I use couplets, and in a way this poem, it's taking a rather wry look at the typical consolatory elegy, where you'd expect to travel to some kind of an outcome where the subject of the poem can move on, the person who's contemplating the dead person. And I use a lot of questions in this poem. It's framed by questions, which in a way tries to undermine that sense that there can be a kind of consolatory outcome, that we're surrounded by the unknown, by doubt and different interpretations. And the pattern of the couplets sort of brings in that constant space, that otherness, that area of doubt. But at the same time, each couplet is an intense moment of recollection, so that the person is there very present in the mind for the duration of a stanza, which is rather the way I think that you feel about a recently dead person, that they're simultaneously being distanced and there are questions you'll never be able to answer about them, but at the same time, they're incredibly immediate. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, and it also brings me onto the question of aesthetics, which I did want to ask you about your poetic style. And I wanted to, you partly answered it, but perhaps you could range a little more widely to what extent you have made self-conscious aesthetic decisions in terms of your poetic style? And I suppose as a natural corollary to that, what do you think is the key or are the keys to your stylistic character as a poet?
Right. That's a very big question.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? That's
well, you know. There are a lot of takes on that. There's a very useful comment that the American poet Carolyn Forche made. She's talking about what we know as the poetry of witness, and she draws a distinction between personal and political poetry and what she sees as lying in between, which she calls the poetry of social space. And in that sort of middle ground poetry, I suppose what ignites the poem can be very personal and be drawn from raw personal experience. It's orientated out perhaps towards the more sort of political or issue edges of expression, but it's neither one or the other. There's a kind of a testing of the two concepts, if you like, an openness of interpretation, and a willingness to let the metaphors do their own work and take you somewhere you hadn't expected to go, or maybe where the reader hadn't expected to go. So I kind of identify myself with that position.
Okay.
And I would want to have that openness, that otherness very much at work. So I like to, as it were, keep alive a tension between the content and the kind of constraints and expectations of the form. So very often there'll be a long sort of flow of speech and thought, but it'll be separated into stanzas. That sort of area of white space will come in and modulate it. And so that's a kind of stylistic feature that I tend to use.
You're unusual in the fact that the mantle of poet has only been on your shoulders officially, whatever on earth that means, for about four or five years, something. You know, you've only been writing.
Sure.
Yeah. For so long, and then obviously publishing for less. Do you see a point in your past where you kind of switched to calling yourself a poet?
Well, I actually, as a child, a poet was what I wanted to be, oddly enough. I had unusual parents. They weren't from a literary background, but they absolutely venerated books and poetry, and they'd have family poetry readings from a very early age. And so I think in that way I sort of absorbed it through my skin, and it set a pattern. And certainly into my early 20s, that was what I wanted to do. But then life intervened, as it does. And
life is rubbish.
All kinds of things happened. I worked in various other areas. And it was only really after my children got to a certain stage that I was able to consider, well, perhaps I should go back to this. And I signed up for the course at Lampeter, and it was a kind of homecoming, actually. That's what it felt like. And it was, this is what I should have been doing all along.
Because that's true, isn't it, Matthew? Mm. I mean, a poet's course, it's never a smooth ride, is it?
Well, I mean, I exist on the outside of this as a critic and a reader, and wouldn't try to proclaim myself a poet apart from some very unsuccessful scribblings. But it's very interesting to see the diversity of courses that people take. Mm-hmm. And I think that is striking.
Because the idea of, you know, you're a poet now because you're published is something that's easier for people to handle. But of course, you were a musician running up to sort of 2009. That's the same thing, really, isn't it? But you're just using different tools.
Yes, I think so. I think there's a sort of a common core of creativity, and you could express it in different ways. And there is, of course, a lot of crossover between music and poetry. I find that sort of having worked as a musician, that feeds into what T.S. Eliot calls the auditory imagination, that kind of instinctive sense of pacing and phrasing and how you use prosodic elements, and it certainly helps.
A lot of the chaps and the ladies we've had have been influenced by music on the podcast.
We started out with the John Barney and his blues.
Yeah, and
I heard that.
On this note, it's well worth anybody who hasn't listened to that to go back and have a quick check on what they have to say, because everything seems to feed into each other. But if you have more things feeding in, then the diversity is going to power a lot of that imagination.
I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, it's true of life experiences that you bring everything that you have and everything you've learnt. And, I mean, you get very young poets who are amazing and seem to be able to encompass the whole of life. I mean, and poets at the other end of the scale who continue to be amazing, even when you think, you know, maybe the mind is beginning to retreat. Age perhaps is immaterial. It's kind of perhaps what fed you in the first place, nurtured your instinctive relationship to language in the first place. And
So just to draw things to a conclusion, you've talked about an upcoming collection with Cinnamon. Can you give us a few hints about where you're going, new directions, interesting content that you want to point out, things to flag up?
Well, I'm definitely be building on this idea of legacy and how we move on from that. I mean, the collection with Cinnamon will be much more broad-ranging in field, and there's quite a lot about 20th century artists and some of their experiences and biographies, and more to do with Welsh landscape, actually. So I'm covering quite a lot of ground there.
So, and that's going to be a 2014 publication.
That's
then.
A 2014 publication.
We look forward to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for coming in. And we're about to kick you out because we need to look in depth at the rest of the Rack Press.